But if he's not back, if it's Russell versus Bottas again, do you think we'll see a different result than we saw this race?
I hope not. First time, Russell had a big, big go. He dominated. He was passing people, you know, like people he's never passed before in his life. So I would love for George to win the last race of the season. And quite frankly, I don't care where Bottas finishes.
Welcome to the Forza F1 podcast. I'm Aaron Jenkins, the editor of Forza Magazine, and with me, as always, is Andrew Frankel, Forza's Formula One editor. After a mostly unremarkable race in Bahrain 2 weekends ago, Romain Grosjean's fiery accident notwithstanding, fans were hoping for more excitement from this past weekend's Sakhir Grand Prix, held on a faster layout of the same circuit. That excitement actually began early in the week when we found out that Mercedes' Lewis Hamilton had tested positive for COVID-19, and he would be replaced by Williams' George Russell, a Mercedes junior driver. This in turn landed F1 newcomer Jack Aitken Russell's seat, and fellow first-timer Pietro Fittipaldi would replace the injured Grosjean at Haas. The excitement only grew in practice when Russell led the first two sessions in a car he'd never driven before and didn't even fit in, and in qualifying, finished just 0.02 seconds behind Bottas. We'll get to Russell's race in a moment, Andrew. But let's take a minute now to highlight an even bigger surprise in qualifying when Charles Leclerc put his Ferrari in fourth place behind the two Mercedes and Red Bull's Max Verstappen. It was the highlight of the Scuderia's weekend, especially with teammate Sebastian Vettel languishing in 13th, and it was one of those laps that you just don't see coming.
No, this is perfectly true. I mean, clearly, Leclerc is a super talent, just like Verstappen is a super talent. So I might as well stick my neck out at the beginning of this podcast and say, could Lewis hang up his helmet, having achieved everything, become Sir Lewis and move on and let the children, the young guys, the young Tigers play? I would love it. And I don't think I'm alone in the world in saying, you know, nobody will ever catch his numbers. Nobody will ever drive like him. But it's time to move on.
I've heard that expressed a number of times, and of course, it's up to Hamilton what he does. Personally, I think he'll continue next season. You say that his records will never be matched, and that's certainly quite possible, but at the same time, he's not the sole record holder of the highest honor, which is the number of world championships. Given that Mercedes is the best car now, has been the best car for the past 7 seasons and looks, there's no particular reason to think it won't be the best car next season. I suspect he'll continue at least until 2021, at which case he might well retire, in which case I predict we will see George Russell replace him.
I mean, there's no question. I think Toto Wolff more or less hinted at the fact that he's looking forward to the Hamilton-Russell super team, which does leave dear old Bottas looking for another job for next year. Well, not next year because he has a contract, but for 2022, I don't think he has a seat as yet.
But sticking with Ferrari and perhaps sticking with the young superstars, Leclerc's race ended on the first lap when he hit Racing Point's Sergio Perez. The collision sent Perez to the pits for new tires, but he was able to continue at the back of the grid, unlike Leclerc and Verstappen. Leclerc broke his suspension in the impact, and Verstappen crashed into the wall trying to avoid them. The stewards called this Leclerc's fault. He was given a 3-grid-place penalty for the next race. And in the meantime, though, his teammate Vettel struggled throughout the race, and 2 slow pit stops due apparently to problems with the equipment made his race even more trying than it would have been. All in all, it was a big shame for the team, especially given how the race played out when Leclerc may have had a mighty finish in the topsy-turvy conclusions.
Yes, you know, when you listen to a broadcast and Ferrari, after the first 2 minutes, doesn't even get a mention, you know that the Scuderia has problems.
Yes, indeed. And another team who had problems, it's time to get into Mercedes' race. It begins when Russell, who started second behind Bottas, jumped his teammate and began to pull away. He quickly pulled out a few second lead, looking very much like Lewis Hamilton in the lead of the race. And he looked set to win his debut race for Mercedes until lap 70, when both Mercedes, they pitted from first and second place for a precautionary tire stop under a safety car. And that's when everything fell apart. Mercedes team boss Toto Wolff later said that it was a radio failure in the garage that caused the problem. But the upshot was Mercedes double stacked the cars. Russell came in first, and the pit crew accidentally put one of Bottas's tires on his car. They only discovered that when Bottas pulled in. And after a lot of confusion, they put Bottas back on his original tires, hard compound, and then they pitted Russell the next time he came around and gave him a set of new mediums. This left them running fourth and fifth, Bottas ahead of Russell after the safety car. Yet Russell managed to get back up to second place until a slow puncture put him back in the pits. And he finally finished his day in ninth, an astonishing fall from grace, but nothing that was his fault.
No, I you know, I have a lot of friends in Britain, and they're all watching, especially the people in Norfolk. He comes from a place called King's Lynn, very, very sort of British part of the world. And they're all totally glued to the TV. And I've been talking to them and various other people in Britain, and they do see him as the new sort of shining star. Although some of them said, had he won the race, a lot of naysayers would have said, you see, it just proves that anybody can win a race in that Mercedes. And Verstappen, interestingly, is one of those who says anybody could win in that Mercedes. Having said that, I do think that the way he passed the other cars and the maturity was the hallmark of a future champion, something I would absolutely welcome with open arms.
I agree completely. And I too have heard the grumbling that it's all about the car. And this season in particular, I think that's absolutely true. Some Mercedes is going to win unless they have problems like this race. But if you look back at 2017 and 2018, Ferrari looked to be the car to beat, and they eventually lost the development race late in the season. I think saying it's all about the car takes away from what Hamilton has accomplished. If it was all about the car, there's no reason why every year but one, Lewis would have absolutely dominated his teammate. And I don't doubt that Verstappen or perhaps Leclerc could have won in the Mercedes. But I clearly, Bottas can't. So I think that it's still a combination of the car and the driver, no matter how good the car is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, in a way, it would have been a fairy tale, of course, had Russell won the race. And all the British newspapers were ready with their headlines, miracle in Bahrain, you know, this sort of thing. Unfortunately, but the extraordinary thing is that over a million people have looked at a picture of Russell after the race, you know, stretched out on the lawn, just wanted to be alone. But more than a million people hitting it shows that, if I might use a silly expression, he's got himself a lot of traction. And he seems to have captured people's imagination. And that's very, very good for the sport because, frankly, people were starting to switch off after Hamilton. We desperately needed something like this. And I'm delighted to say that last week I said we had listeners in 45 countries. Now we're up to 47. And who knows, by the final race of the season, we might even hit 50. And many, many thanks to all of those people. And, of course, we hope to greet them again from Abu Dhabi.
Yes, absolutely. You mentioned before that it would have been a fairy tale result if Russell had won. And in fact, it was a fairy tale result, which we'll get to in a minute, just not for him. Even though he finished ninth, one place behind Bottas, I think this was a landmark day for both of the Mercedes drivers. Russell proved he deserved a top drive, given everything that was against him stepping into this car, and he would have won it, surely, if not for not one but two tire issues. And I think that it was a landmark day for Bottas in the opposite way. I too saw a picture of a Mercedes driver stretched out on the grass, but it was Bottas staring up into the heavens, wondering how everything could have gone so horribly wrong for him. I mean, yes, he was 200ths of a second ahead in qualifying, but that was literally the high point of Valtteri's weekend. What this really showed more than anything else is not how much of a role the car played, but how big of a gap there is, I believe, between Bottas and the best of the best drivers.
Oh, absolutely. Totally agree with you. And all I can tell you is that I've been to an awful lot of races over the years. The ones I didn't get to, I watched on television. After several at which I thought, should I really be, can I be bothered to get up? This one, I set the alarm extra early and I was totally glued to my seat during qualifying. I was screaming, go George, go George. And of course he didn't quite get pole position. And when he was leading for the first 60 or so laps, I was beside myself.
Yeah, and I think that looking at him in the car leading those 60 or so laps, you never would have guessed that he had just climbed in unless you knew it. He, like I said earlier, he put in a Hamilton-esque performance, not putting a wheel wrong and just pulling out a gap and controlling the race.
I don't think he's ever passed anyone in Formula One before, or if so, it was probably Latifi or something like that. And all of a sudden, he was passing all the big names as though he'd been doing it for years and years and years.
I think it's easy to forget that he's one of only two drivers in history to win the F3 championship and then the F2 championship in consecutive years. If he had been able to get a seat higher up in the grid, he certainly would have. He only elected to go to Williams because he figured no matter how slow it was better to be in a Formula One car than not in a Formula One car. And as it turns out, you know, maybe this was the way to do it. He got almost two full years of experience under his belt with no pressure on him whatsoever, beating first Kubica and now Latifi. And then he got his chance and he beat a top driver, Bottas.
I do hope Lewis will make a total recovery soon. But I also hope, partly for his sake and partly for the race in Abu Dhabi, that he'll do the right thing and sit it out instead of trying to race when he's not 200% fit. And it would also give us a fabulous last race, says he selfishly.
The 7,000 plus members of the Ferrari Club of America, the world's largest Ferrari club, enjoy exciting track events, an internationally recognized concours d'elegance, and a wide variety of year-round social activities. The members of our 16 active regions and 52 chapters throughout the US and Canada also receive our monthly news bulletin, plus Prancing Horse, our full-color quarterly magazine. Our tremendous program of membership benefits even includes discounts at authorized Ferrari dealerships and selected retailers. So join today. Visit us online now at FerrariClubOfAmerica.org.
All right, so on to that fairy tale ending. As I mentioned, Racing Point's Sergio Perez was spun around on the first lap by Charles Leclerc, and it's astonishing, given the force of that impact, that he didn't break, that the car's suspension wasn't broken, but it continued on with no problems. He pitted on that first lap for a new set of medium tires, and then over the course of those next 60 laps, he passed every single car in the field except the Mercedes to get up into third place. And then when they stopped and bodged it, he found himself with around 25 laps to go, leading the race, followed almost bizarrely by Renault's Esteban Ocon, who has been completely outclassed by his teammate, Daniel Ricciardo, this season, and his Racing Point teammate, Lance Stroll. We were denied, I think, a real photo finish when racing resumed and Russell passed everybody, getting up to second place before then pitting for his tire puncture. We didn't get to see him and Perez go head to head. But I guess in the end, it doesn't matter, because after 190 Grands Prix, the most in history without a Formula One win, Sergio Perez finally got his first victory. We've talked a lot this season, too much probably, about whether Perez would be in the field next year, and we still don't know the answer to that. And we've talked about whether Red Bull would give in and drop Albon in favor of an available driver who's not part of their young driver program. And we still don't know the answer to that either. But what I think this does is it's the perfect thing to put on his resume. There's nothing else Perez could do to convince a team to hire him. And as he said afterwards, the decision's now out of his hands. But if he doesn't get a drive next season, apparently he'll be back in 2022, which is great news for everyone, given that more than any other driver I can think of, he's shown that he deserves to be in the sport.
This is perfectly true. I should point out that we have not had a winner from Mexico for 50 years. I should also confess that I was there at Spa 50 years ago, and I did see Pedro Rodriguez beat the likes of Jackie Stewart and Chris Amon and Jochen Rindt and everybody else. It was a bit of a topsy-turvy race, just like this one. But can you imagine those wonderful people in Mexico when Chico finally got to the top of the podium with the Mexican flag? Yep. And also, hands up all those who last heard the Mexican national anthem. I mean, it is so wonderful. It's such a lovely change. I absolutely loved it. He shed a tear or two in the cockpit. I understand it. There's only one thing against him. It's his age. I know 30 is not old, but if you think in terms of the new Schumachers and the Tsunodas from Japan, and you've got Zhu coming from China, I mean, all these young tigers, the 19, 20, 21, a lot of them with pots of money. I would love to see him in Formula One, but should he drop out, or should, you know, just like many other people you and I have known who've retired for whatever reason, at least he can look at the trophy and he could say, if I may paraphrase Frank Sinatra, I did it my way.
Perez, of course, also comes with his own pot of money. There's no question about that. And I agree with you to some degree about his age, but I think that, and we see that with Haas next year, having signed two barely 20-somethings, I believe, in Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin, but Lewis Hamilton is 36 now, Sebastian Vettel's a couple years younger, he's going to a new team, Raikkonen is way up there, and he's still beating his younger teammate. So there's definitely a balance. Schumacher was racing until he was in his 40s. Alonso's up there. There's definitely a trade-off in there between, you know, youthful aggression and the wisdom that comes from so many years. So I take your point. I don't think there's a great answer to that, except perhaps that the ideal might be pairing a veteran with a rising star.
You know, it's interesting because, in a way, it comes back to money. On the one hand, with Albon, we've got this billionaire from Thailand versus Perez with the billionaire from Mexico. So, what do I say? May the best billionaire win? Who knows? I mean, it's completely crazy. I do think that the guy I'm afraid I call Mazepin because he has a sugar daddy. And it so happens that's his real daddy. But there is no way he should be in Formula One. If Chico has to leave and this guy comes in, then let me just say that there is no justice.
And actually, this reminds me, we should congratulate Mick Schumacher for claiming the F2 title this weekend. So he's not coming into Formula One strictly on the basis of his father's name and connections. So if we've talked about this, I don't think on the podcast before, but in the magazine, Carlos Sainz will be joining Ferrari on a two-year contract next year, but come 2023, if Mick Schumacher is proven his worth at Haas, I can certainly imagine him taking the step up to the Scuderia and joining, I'll presume it's going to be Leclerc.
Yes. But let me just say, we haven't mentioned him until now, how wonderful it was for someone who knew Emerson Fittipaldi as well as I knew Emo in the 70s. It must be fantastic for him to see his grandson, even if he came last, but at least it was not last, but nearly last, doesn't matter. The name Fittipaldi is magic the world over to those who are old enough to remember Emo, world champion in 72 and 74, huge rival of Jackie Stewart's. And I found it emotionally rather touching. And also the fact that we have him, and next year we have Schumacher. So the great names are coming back, and I think that's rather nice.
And I think Fittipaldi and Aitken both, just bringing in new unknowns just to see what they can do is always an exciting thing, which when combined with Russell moving to the top car and having the new very high speed, very quick lap layout of the track made it just the potential for a great weekend was there from the beginning, and we certainly got it. Returning to second place, Ocon for a minute. I mentioned that he was actually, it all seems to come back to Lance Stroll one way or another. Ocon was a rising star, Mercedes junior driver at Force India, until Lawrence Stroll bailed the team out and renamed it, brought in his son, and Ocon ended up sitting out last season as a Mercedes reserve driver. He ended up having to cut his ties to the team in order to become a racing driver at Renault, and it's finally worked out for him getting this podium. And this has got to give him a boost, because next year he's potentially going to face a much stiffer challenge in a teammate than Ricardo when Fernando Alonso returns.
I have an idea. It will never happen. But as we've been talking about the young guys and old guys, suppose you had a race between the under 25s versus the over 25s. Just think about it for a second. You would have Russell, you know, and Leclerc and Verstappen against Vettel and Lewis and Alonso
Raikkonen. So you'd have how many world championships? 14?
Oh, but 7 from Lewis, 4 from Vettel, 2 from Alonso,
and 1. So yeah, 14.
So wouldn't it be great? You know, the young Tigers versus the old guys.
In a way, we'll see that, especially if we happen to get the Lewis George super team that you mentioned. Although it's interesting, do you think that Lewis has always said, just like Verstappen has said, that he doesn't care who his teammate is, he'll race whoever's there. But at the same time, Lewis didn't end up being a happy teammate to Nico Rosberg, and he certainly isn't. He's very congratulatory of Bottas when he's behind him, but is not a happy camper when he beats him. So I don't know that this would be. And again, Lewis, of course, now has the legacy. If at the end of next year he's an 8-time world champion, what happens if George comes into the team alongside him and just destroys him the way that, say, Ricardo and Leclerc have done to Vettel in their first years at a given team?
And that's the point that you send the great British public, who are fanatical supporters, as we often said, you know, the anoraks, who pitch their tents on the Wednesday for the race on the Sunday at Silverstone. They, from what I can gather, their loyalty to Lewis is now moving on towards the young underdog or young star or whatever. So Lewis's fanatical supporters, I think you'll find, are to some extent moving across, and I'm one of them, you know, to be fair. I just can't have enough of all these young guys. And something else, it's an open secret that editor Jenkins is a little bit partial to Chico Perez, rightly so. So I wonder, Seb Vettel, who really has been pretty abysmal of late on the track, is a very nice guy, looking at Chico, how can he do better than coming back from 18th to first? I mean, he has problems at what will be Aston Martin.
Oh, I that was actually the next question on my list here. I agree with you completely. And I thought it was fairly disingenuous for both Lawrence Stroll and Racing Point team boss Otmar Szafnauer to encourage Red Bull to pick up Perez's contract to give him a seat next year after they fired him in order to get Vettel. But let's presume that, or let's leave that aside for now. So Stroll finished third in Sakhir, another excellent, well-deserved result for the young Canadian who we've badmouthed from time to time, but seems to really be coming into his own lately. Maybe in part it's the quality of the car, but he put in a brilliant drive in mixed conditions to take pole a couple races ago, and now he's on the podium again. What do you think, if you had to make a fairly blind prediction, the running order will be at Aston Martin next year, Stroll versus Vettel?
I think that Papa Stroll will say no team orders. He can't possibly tell Vettel to let little, you know, his son go past him. I think it was going to be a free-for-all, just like Toto Wolff said before the race, no team orders, go and have a nice time.
Sorry, my question wasn't whether you thought there would be team orders. I agree. I can't imagine why you would hire Vettel and not let him perform at his maximum. The question was more, who do you think will win in that battle, Stroll or Vettel? Who's going to be the faster driver at Aston Martin?
It really depends on whether Vettel can somehow wake up, re-motivate himself as opposed to demotivate, which seems to be happening now. If he can somehow find that little extra, you know, which has been with him for years. I mean, don't forget his first race in the rain, you know, when he won. I have my doubts.
I think his first few seasons at Ferrari as well. There was no question that he was still driving at what felt like a very high level. He just didn't have a car to compete fully. And yes, he in 17 and 18, he was the driver to beat in the first half of the season. And then whether it was him or whether it was the team not developing the car enough fell off. I mean, certainly this season and in a lot of ways, 2019 have been torrid for him, but...
But let me just say that Vettel actually is one of the brightest and wittiest of people on the grid. I never forget his eulogy to Charlie Whiting and the way he delivered that. I don't think the other 19 could have delivered what he did. He also has a tremendous sense of humor. As you know, last week there was a dog that ran across the track and he immediately said, "Who let the dog out?" You know, in 2 milliseconds. So he is intellectually, he's all there. Whether the fire will come back into his driving remains to be seen. But he will be doing one very, very special thing. And that, again, is emotionally very dear to my heart. He said openly that he will do absolutely everything in his power to coach young Mick Schumacher because Father Schumacher coached him a great deal, and he said, "I'll tell him everything I know about Formula One and want him to succeed." Because don't forget, Michael and Vettel raced in all sorts of races together, not on track, but in stadiums when you had these nations, cups and things. And they absolutely love each other and got on like a house on fire, and they kept winning. Tremendous. And this is the legacy that Vettel would like to carry on to Mick.
No, you're absolutely right. And I guess it remains to be seen whether Vettel will extend that same courtesy to potentially his young protege at Aston Martin, who is actually in a position to beat him. If I had to put money on it, I'm actually going to go with Vettel. I think that Vettel's talent is at or above Perez's level, and Stroll is that tiny step below it. But, you know, I don't think there's any question that Stroll is improving. And we certainly haven't seen Vettel improving anytime recently.
Well, of course, the wonderful thing in a season totally dominated that we still had highlights by others. We had Pierre Gasly winning for the first time in his life. Now we had Checo Perez winning for the first time in his life. We had young Stroll leading for something like 36 laps. So there are some nuggets apart from Lewis's dominance.
Coming up this weekend is this season's finale at Abu Dhabi. We don't know yet if Lewis Hamilton will be back in the Mercedes or if, as you mentioned, he'll continue to heal up. But if he's not back, if it's Russell versus Bottas again, do you think we'll see a different result than we saw this race?
I hope not. I hope not. First time Russell had a big go. He dominated. He was passing people, you know, like people he's never passed before in his life. And in fact, he was the guy who was being passed by all the others.
Yep.
So I would love for George to win the last race of the season. And quite frankly, I don't care where Bottas finishes. He's a nice enough guy. It would be nice to have an upset. But please, please, may George win his first ever race. And then we will have had Lewis winning races, Bottas winning races, Gasly winning, Chico winning, and this now could be Russell as well. So five winners, which would make it a little bit more balanced than it's just Lewis one and everybody else nil.
I agree completely. That's it for this episode of the Forza F1 podcast. Join us next week after the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Thanks for listening this week. If you like the podcast, check out our website, forzamag.com. That's forza-mag.com, where you can subscribe to our newsletter for the latest Ferrari news and reviews. You can follow us on social media at forzamag, forzamag, no hyphen.